Welcome to Grant. You're listening to Off the Wall on Swimming World Radio. Here are your hosts, Nathan and Felipe.
Welcome back, one and all, to another episode of Off the Wall on Swimming World Radio. I'm your host, Nathan Jendrick, joined by Felipe Delgado. We've got a great show for you today with a wide variety of topics. And in just a little bit, we will be having an interview on our Swim Off one-on-one with three-time Olympian Ian Crocker. And we'll be excited to ask Ian what he's up to and what's been keeping him busy over the last 4 years and his thoughts on some things going on in the sport. Felipe, lots to talk about today, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
You know, I just celebrated my whopping 28th birthday on the 23rd, and I don't know, man. I'm telling you, I'm getting so much gray that people are starting to mistake me for Anderson Cooper. It's not good. It's not good at all. I don't pull it off as well as that guy does.
I remember when I was 28. Kind of.
You probably didn't have as much gray hair as I did at 28.
No, the gray has just started to come. But, you know, everybody will get gray hair in their due time, and I think it's about time for me to get, as my wife says, distinguished. And it's happening slowly but surely. It's happening more in the back of my head, so I can't really see it. People have to point it out to me. But
isn't that great, you know, how women do that? They try to make you feel good about it.
Age gracefully.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. That's a good way of saying – that's a nice way of saying you're getting old.
Exactly. I mean, it's sweet of them, but at the same time, it's, you know, let's be honest with ourselves, okay?
You know, you know what? It seems like you know, salt and pepper is not a bad thing. It's not a bad way to go, and Anderson Cooper is making it, you know, it's making it in fashionable, and so let's just age gracefully, as they say.
Yeah, I think gray hair though, it's one of those things that if you're gonna do it, you know, you got to go all the way. And Anderson Cooper is all the way. Me, I'm just like, you know, 50 hairs in a clump here and then there. And, yeah, it's just bad. But anyway, we'll talk about more important things like swimming. So.
Sure.
Lots been going on lately. Since our last episode where we had discussed, for example, media exposure and whether or not it's all a good thing. And we particularly use Ryan Lochte as a good example. He was parodied, we will say, by Saturday Night Live. Now, I saw it. I didn't think it was that bad. I didn't think it was a wonderful piece or whatnot. I did find myself laughing at a couple points. But I didn't think that they were slamming Ryan. I didn't think that it was malicious. Yet, of course, if you read some of the comments to the story, you can actually watch the video, by the way, for our listeners who haven't seen it yet, on swimmingworldmagazine.com. There's a link. And if you read some of those comments, some people seem to think that it was just awful and like as if there was this hatred toward Ryan or if somebody was out to get him or whatnot. A lot of the news magazines online and even a couple programs on television, they're coming out about how Seth MacFarlane just, you know, slammed Ryan and all this stuff. But Felipe, maybe it's just me, but I didn't think it was that bad.
I think Seth MacFarlane is great at what he does, and he was right on, and it was funny as hell. I had so many moments where I laughed. I thought it was hilarious. Look, it doesn't seem like Ryan takes himself too seriously, okay? So I'm going to guess to say that he wasn't very offended by it. I thought Seth MacFarlane did a great job. I think the fact that they are doing a spoof on a swimmer is great. And I think the fact that people are talking about it is great. And, you know, if that's, you know, if Seth characterized Ryan's personality, then he did. And I think he did a great job. And I think Ryan does come across as laid back. And I think that's what Seth and Saturday Night Live and their crew were going after. I think he did a great job. I think it was funny. And again, I think anytime you can get a swimmer on a massive show like Saturday Night Live, I think it's great for the sport.
I absolutely agree. In fact, people were saying that, oh, that's nothing like Ryan. He didn't have any of it right. Well, I think he had quite a bit of it right. Ryan is very laid back. He's kind of got that, you know, that surfer feel to him. He's just laid back guy, having a good time, kind of funny, you know, laughs a lot. And, yeah, okay, you know, nobody's going to have it. No one's going to perfectly you know, imitate somebody else, but you don't. That's not what it was about. It was just about having a little fun with it, and I think you did a great job. Obviously, there were probably people were probably more offended at the little gaps of intelligence that he portrayed on there, because Ryan's actually a smart guy. So those things, you know, that doesn't fit. But that's fine. But just the way the speech, nice and slow, smiling, laughing and everything. I mean, that was funny. I thought it was good. I particularly liked the part where he's talking about, you know, the little shows inside the big show. That was good. And how that explains a lot and why he was in a lot of them. I mean, it was good. I thought it was good.
You just reminded me of that. That was uncontrolled laughter on my part right now. So I'm sorry. so unprofessional of me, but absolutely those that part was hilarious. That was one of the moments where I really laughed and got a kick out of it. You know, Sean Penn played Jeff Spicoli and did an unbelievable job of coming across as somebody as laid back and surfer type and blah, blah, blah. Ryan's just doing it in real life. That's who he is. And I think if Sean Penn could do that movie again, he'd come back as Ryan Lochte. So.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I understand that some people who are just diehard fans of someone are going to be offended anytime they feel somebody's taking a shot at their favorite athlete. But come on, this was in good fun. It was great publicity. And, you know, Ryan came out, laughed a little bit, said it was pretty harsh. But you know what? Maybe they'll let him come on the show and host it at some point, and he can be in his own skit. So I think it was great. No harm, no foul. And it got a lot of people talking, a lot of people mentioning swimming. You know, we're a couple months past the Olympics now. So it was good.
Hey, just a note, you know, that movie, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, was 30 years ago. It was made 30 years ago. How does that make you feel?
Well, I wasn't.
I have no idea what I'm talking about.
I'm 28. I have seen the movie. I wasn't around when it came out. So how does it make you feel?
It just goes right back full circle to the beginning of our conversation. Aging gracefully, okay? So
that's right. Well, you know, look at it this way. Aging gracefully, if it means you're only as old as you act, buddy, you're still young. That's all good. So, anyway, speaking of age and aging gracefully and whatnot, there have been some retirements lately being announced, and then there's other athletes such as Rebecca Adlington, who has come out and said that while she's not necessarily retiring, she won't be participating in another Olympic Games or making an attempt to compete in 2016 in Rio de Janeiro. But one particular retirement that I thought was rather interesting, Felipe, and I wanted to talk a bit about it because it has a great deal of conversational aspects to it, is Frances Allan Bernard, former world record holder and Olympic champion over 100 meters freestyle, also a great 50 freestyler, and perhaps best known for his role in that 2008 French contingent relay where Superman Jason Lizak came back and saved the day for Team USA. But he retired, hung up his suit, and he had a great run, lots of accolades, but he, I don't think, quite will ever shake down that relay, which is okay. I mean, you know, he did end up with a relay and a gold for being on the prelims relay for 2012 in London, where France did win the relay. But while he's got a nice medal haul, people are wondering whether or not he is a suit swimmer. And by suit swimmer, because I realize we have some new listeners, we have quite the expanded audience, which I'm very proud of, but we have lots of people who are only recently tuning in to the sport, and they don't quite understand what suit swimmer means. They don't understand that the technical suits and how big of a deal those really were before they were banned. But the tech suits, safe to say, did a lot for a lot of people. And one of the things that my issue was, and a lot of people agreed with, about the tech suits, is that they did help certain people more than other people. It's not like goggles where, hey, you can see underwater without the red eyes now, and so can I. The suits definitely helped people, certain people, more than others. Now, Felipe, my personal opinion, Allan Bernard is definitely one of these people who were helped a heck of a lot more by those suits than the average person.
One of the things that the suit helps you do, of course, the suits were to help, it helps streamline, it helps compress the swimmer, making it assisting you as you go through the water in a more streamlined fashion. When you have a guy the size of Alan Bernard, a guy the size of Jason Lezak, and some of the other swimmers that are, you know, in the 6'4", 6'5", 200 plus pounds, it really helps to compress them and allow them to go through the water a lot easier. But it also, you know, it maintains their power and allows them to conserve energy throughout the race. So with that said, Alan Bernard, of course, he did benefit. And the proof is in the pudding. When it comes to times, his times, like most of the swimmers that went through the suit era, his times were fastest during that era, and he never got any – he did not get faster post-suit era. So with that said, Alan is came into the sport. He did his job. He did a fantastic job. He'll always unfortunately be remembered for being run down by Jason Lezak. But let's not forget that after he was run down, and quite possibly one of the most shocking sports moments in Olympic history – he did regroup and come back and win the 100 free. So I think people tend to overlook that fact that he was able to regroup in a couple within a couple of days and come back and win the 100. So good for Alan. He's a young man. He's still 29 years old. I think he's your age. So he's 29 years old, and I'm sure he's got a bright future in whatever it is that he does post-swimming career. So good for him, and good for France being able to being able to put him on the front pages as a great athlete that he is, and in his retirement.
Yeah, the thing you talk about helping streamline them, that's true as well. But one of the big things that I always felt were such a big deal with the suit is a lot of coaches talked about how it was able to take the core out of it. People ignored core training. Well, obviously, the taller you are, there are physiological aspects, just technical aspects in which the core come into play. Perhaps he was able to take advantage of that and refocus his training on other things. But it also helps guys that are dense, and by dense I just mean muscular, right? Because most people you see who have a lot of muscle mass, they sink in the pool. They don't float. Because remember, fat floats, and there's always going to be the debate on what the right argument is on, you know, how much. And you know, most swimmers, of course, are lean, but they're not, you know, contest bodybuilder lean, right? And they're not huge when it comes to muscles, at least compared to the average guys who train specifically for muscle size. Well, Alan Bernard, I don't know if you've noticed, Felipe, but the guy is jacked. I mean,
Alan Bernard is the French version of Jason Lezak in the United States. I mean, they are big guys, more fitting to be, you know, tight ends in the NFL than swimmers.
Yeah, I mean, Alan Bernard is one of, if not the most muscular swimmer that I've seen, and Jason Lezak is a big guy. He's built, but Alan Bernard is bigger than Jason Lezak. I mean, Alan Bernard's traps go up to his ears. You see that yeah, in bodybuilders. You don't see that in swimmers. Yep. There's one of the more famous pictures of him is after, I believe it was after winning the 100 free, and he's on the lane line, and his hands are out in front of him. It's like he's doing a most muscular pose. I mean, the guy is jacked. Like, right. Where did his neck go is what you're asking yourself. I mean,
right. So. Yeah, I mean, he's a physical specimen, and, you know, how much genetics has to do with that, who knows. But, I mean, the guy is – he's a big dude. He's got a really, really big, broad shoulders, really big upper body, making it, you know, just like you said earlier, it's like, you know, a big truck going through the water. So when that gets compressed and streamlined and you're able to be energy efficient as you're going because it's, the suit's helping you with the buoyancy, I think the advantage is in the bigger swimmers. And in this case, you're looking at Alan, and he took full advantage of a great opportunity. He made the most of it, so good for him.
Yeah, you can't blame the guy for just swimming in the same suits that everybody else had the opportunity to swim in, unless you're with Speedo. We know how a couple of their athletes ended up being stuck in the Speedo laser as compared to any of the full poly suits, but we won't get into that.
That might be a subject you might want to go at it on your own there, big guy.
You can't argue with Speedo for wanting to protect their brand. It just, you know, there was a mistake in not getting the other suits out there, but that's another story for another day. But no, you have to give Alan credit where credit is due, and you know, he swam in the suits available to him, and he just happened to take advantage of what some people call a dark period in the sport. But that aside, his medals count the same as anybody else's, and he'll always be Olympic champion over 100 meters freestyle.
That's correct. So good for him. And
yeah, absolutely.
Young man,
and
like I said, I don't think he'll disappear from the sport. I think he'll in some one way or another still be a part of France's Olympic movement. So,
well, and you know, the people in those countries, what's kind of great opportunities for him at least is, unlike the United States, where we have a plethora of Olympic medalists in swimming, and it's hard for most Olympic medalists to maintain a really well-known image in the sport. He will not have that much of an issue in France. France, much like many European countries, when you are an Olympic champion, you are actually a big deal, and you don't need to pull a Lochte, Franklin, Phelps-esque 5, 6, you know, 7, 8 medals in an Olympics to do it, which I think is great. So he's going to have a lot of opportunities over there in retirement to stay involved and promote swimming. So good for him.
Yep.
Great career. And, you know, it was great to watch him while he decided to be a part of the competitive aspect of things. And we wish him nothing but the best.
Absolutely.
Now, moving on to somewhat more serious, I don't even know if we want to call one of these serious, but there were some things passed down and discussed at the most recent convention for USA Swimming, and some interesting rule requests and rule changes, I guess we could call them. And we'll start with one of the one that I think is kind of laughable, deck changing. And this is, I didn't realize that deck changing was an issue until I started reading about how there was a proposed amendment and people taking sides and commentaries and whatnot. And I absolutely, I just want to put this out here, I absolutely respect the opinion that anybody has on this subject or any other. I don't have to agree with it. I mean, if people listen to the show, they know Felipe and I don't always agree, but of course we respect each other's opinions and we respect all of our listeners' opinions. But my personal opinion is that the fact that deck changing has even come up is hilarious. I mean, I can't help but giggle a little bit when I hear about this, because even at 28, and even when I started swimming at 17, I deck changed then, I deck changed now, and I can at least say in my 11 years of doing it, it's always been successful. There's never been an issue. So me, myself, amongst the other 1,000 swimmers or so that I hang around with at meets, it's all over the place, and I've never known it to be an issue. So, Felipe, was I just, like, head under a rock type thing going on with this, or was this a bigger, you know, has this been a bigger issue?
I don't know. I must have been at the blackjack tables during that conversation, because I missed that. I missed that one completely. Either that, or I didn't care too much to listen. I think it's they're just, I don't know if they run out of things to talk about in ASCA, or
well,
you know,
this is for the USA Swimming, you know, House of Delegates and all,
right.
But
yeah. Yeah.
Still, you know, I'm sure there were other more important things to talk about. But at some point, somebody must have thought that deck changing was a serious issue, because it did come up, and there actually was a bit of a rule change passed.
Okay, so hold on a second. So I must be so confused, and this is the best part of doing this, because this is all live and it's not, you know, planned. But so this did not happen at ASCA. This happened later, right?
Right, right. This wasn't ASCA.
Okay, so good. I didn't miss anything.
You're free about the blackjack tables. You're all right.
Okay, so I didn't miss anything. So that's good. So this happened later on at the USA Swimming Conventions in Carolina or wherever it was.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, yeah. All right. So what are we talking about? No, I think, you know what? Here you go. Here's my take on it. The folks who are talking about it shouldn't be deck changing there. Let's leave it at that.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot, Felipe. When's the last time you deck changed?
Yesterday. Yesterday. I deck changed yesterday. I went to the lake with my kids. And after I got, you know, I got out of the water, I'm playing around with my kids. We get out. My kids are there, and, you know, we showered off, and I deck changed. It was the most natural thing in the world. Not one person stopped and looked and said anything or made any comments. That's the last time I deck changed. I own a swim school. I've deck changed on deck at my swim school. Nobody's ever said a word to me. You know, I go to master swimming. I deck change. Nobody says anything. It's just part of the culture. It's part. Now, we were talking before the show, when people do it in a situation where it might be questionable. You had mentioned something about a female swimmer deck changing while she's talking to her male coach. Okay, let's use common sense, but I'm going to say that that's isolated. I'm going to say that's more of an isolated situation than the norm. So, you know what? If that's the case, I love to see the conversation between the meet volunteer and the student and the swimmer as he has his shorts around his ankles and he's changing. The volunteer's trying to tell him not to or tell her not to. So I don't know. I think it's funny. It's just, I guess, again, they must have ran out of things to talk about.
Yeah, it's just it's interesting because it's one of those things that over my time in swimming, and granted, compared to other folks, my time in swimming has been a bit limited. I didn't learn how to swim until I was almost 18. When I was much, much younger, I almost drowned, and I was terrified of the water for 10 years. I started dating someone, who happened to be a relatively successful swimmer and decided at that point I should learn how to swim. And that was the only reason I ended up getting back. Of course, fortunately, I found out I loved the sport, and I learned how to swim and got involved in high school swimming, then club swimming, and started coaching and so on, and that kind of went from there. But my time in swimming, relatively short, but my swimming career, if you can call it that, has spanned high school swimming, the state meet for high school, senior sectionals. I've been at national meets, master's meets, and people deck changed at every single one of them. I didn't understand the big deal when I was in high school. I've been at master's meets where men and women in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, probably 70s have deck changed.
Right.
And it's never been an issue. So I was really surprised, and I realized that there's genuine concern. But again, it's the situations where common sense should take place that have brought the concern. And I think that goes with anything, though. And you shouldn't make just overbearing rules to prevent situations that shouldn't have happened in the first place, even without the rules. And again, common sense. And I think in those types of situations, it's, again, you said isolated. That's a great word. And people should perhaps be educated there, but I don't think there needs to be an overbearing rule. Now, what ended up coming down was they approved a measure that deck changing can be banned at meets where the meet host specifically comes out and says that it's prohibited. Now, I don't know that you need a rule about that, because I think if a meet host had wanted to do that before, they could have already done that.
Right.
It's the same way that, in certain restaurants or whatever, they have signs say, such and such not allowed, whether it be, pets, guns, drinks, food, whatever. You can already do that. So I don't know that the rule is going to make any difference. I would venture to guess that most meat directors are probably well versed in the fact that it's pretty common.
That's correct.
In my case, going back to what they can or can't allow, apparently that you can't have a baby, but that's another topic. Felipe, you and I talked about that.
That's correct.
That's another topic yesteryear.
Yep.
But yeah, so I thought it was a little bit interesting. Maybe our listeners, now who are just getting versed in the conversation as well, maybe they have something else on their mind about it. And by all means, go ahead and go to swimworldmagazine.com, comment in the show box, and I'm interested to hear what other people think about this.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to change much.
Right.
I don't think it'll change much. Now, another thing, perhaps the more serious of the two, there was an amendment, a proposal that that tried to ban adult swimmer relationships. And I hesitate when I say this because there has to be, I think, a bit of a preface involved. They were saying they were trying to, as it was proposed, would have banned relationships between adult coaches and adult swimmers. So we'll get that out there. So otherwise, totally appropriate relationships outside of the pool were trying to be prohibited when it comes down to the club level.
Can you?
And this is interesting to me because it did say that except for previous existing adult relationships, et cetera, et cetera. But it's interesting because, you know, I am my wife's coach.
Right.
My wife is a, you know, an Olympic athlete. Right. I'm her coach. We got, you know, we obviously were married long before I was her coach, but it's interesting just the whole perspective of it, because to me, you know, adults are free to do yeah. what adults want to do. And I realize that some people think it might create favoritism if there's a relationship, but just because two people can't get married doesn't mean that favoritism wouldn't exist anyway.
Well, good luck trying to uphold that one, because I think, you know, like you said, adults will do what they need to do. And, you know, although it might not seem like the best decision, you know, if it is a decision that's acted on, you know, there's really not so much that anyone can do, because then you get into legal issues, because now you're dealing with something that you can't really enforce. Or
inalienable rights, for one.
Exactly. So that's going to be a tough one. And it's not that I'm, you know, for or against. I just think, you look at it, you remove yourself from the situation, you look from the outside in, it looks like that one might be a tough one to uphold.
Yeah, I understand the purpose of it. I
yes.
absolutely do. But I don't think that, I don't think that banning relationships between swimmers and coaches is going to make, would make any difference, because it's just simply one of those things that would become, they would try to hide it. You know, I think two people who want to be together, as much as people love swimming and as much as swimming is a part of all of our lives, I don't think that two people who want to be together and share their lives with one another are going to let a sport take away from that. And I think at that point, then you start having things that happen in private, or people try to hide things, and then it gets a stigma of there being something wrong with it.
Sure.
And when it's two adults, that's the part that would be wrong, I think, because when people are like, oh, well, do you think something's going on? And then it just starts rumors and hearsay, yep. and it's just there's nothing positive that's going to come out of that. I think it's much better for people to be out in the open. And that way, if somebody senses that there's some favoritism going on the team, well, at least you can point directly to it and say, well, I feel that this is happening because they're in a relationship, rather than, oh, well, I think these people are screwing around and that's why such and such is happening. Well, you know, that's for adults to have to hide a relationship, I just don't think is okay. You know, I know it's a sticky subject. I realize that there's a purpose behind it, and a well-intentioned purpose behind it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't feel that a blanket ban on adult swimmer and adult coach relationships would be very effective.
Correct. I agree with you.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I know I hesitate as I say this. And I'm sure our listeners are you know, not.
It's not, look, I'm in, look, so that you don't feel alone, we're both on the same page here. And I think it's not so much that we're neither you nor I are for or against it. We just don't think it is something that should be made into a blanket statement, because there are so many different cases out there where, you know, there are previous situations where you can say, okay, what are you going to do? Are you going to accept the previous situations, but no new situations or no new relationships can come about after this rule is put in place? Because that is when you, that's when the real problems start. Because like you said earlier, like you mentioned earlier, that's when people start, you know, sneaking around, I guess you can say, if adults can do that. you start to sneak around, or you start to play games, and that's when the rumor mill starts. And once the rumor mill starts, that can be extremely damaging, whether it's false or accurate rumors. So I think it's going to be, one that needs to be probably looked at a little bit closer before it's enacted, so that there is not a gray area, and so also so people are not affected that otherwise should not be affected. So who knows? Like I said, neither for nor against, but I think it's something that needs to be looked at a little bit more, a little bit closer, before it's put into place.
Yeah, I think that there's just too much of an issue in finding certain situations that wouldn't be covered under one simple rule. For example, you end up with a lot of swimmers that are dating or seeing each other on and off. And as we know, lots of swimmers transition to coaches. Well, then what do you have when one swimmer who was an athlete at one point, who's now a coach, who happens to be a coach on the team. And, I mean, those are just one-off situations that probably happen more often around the country than people.
Let's put this into perspective. Ricky Behrens, I think that's Rebecca Soni's boyfriend. Is that correct? Right?
That's correct.
Okay. So Ricky Behrens, I think, is now one of the volunteer assistants at University of Texas. Let's say Rebecca were decided to go and swim at the University of Texas to train. What would happen at that point? How do you enforce the rule? Because now you have a coach and you have a swimmer and they're dating. Is that correct?
Right. That's the way it would seem to me.
Yeah. So now how do you enforce that? You really going to go and tell them to break up or tell her she can't participate on the team because he's a part of the coaching staff? It doesn't make a lot of sense. And I don't know if our sport gets to that level, and I understand what they're trying to do, but if our sport gets to that level, I think you're now, it's almost like micromanaging, and you're also, I think you're addressing the wrong population. You know, you're addressing adults when you should be addressing the other real issues that are going on in the sport.
Right, and I think at this point, USA Swimming is taking a lot of blame that some of it I absolutely think is due.
Rightfully
just
so.
Because,
yep.
Right, they're getting a lot of flack, which I think even they admit that they've dropped the ball on, at least privately, that they've dropped the ball on a few important topics. But I think a lot of this kind of stuff really needs to come down to the club level, because individual clubs need to be responsible for what's happening on in individual clubs. It's easy to go to USA Swimming and say, hey, you're messing up. It's the same way that anytime something goes wrong with crime in a city, people go back to the city and say, well, such and such is happening, or the state, or they go back to just the country as a whole and they want to blame laws that are in place or aren't in place. And you have to start right where things are happening.
I think you nailed it, and I apologize for interrupting, but I got a quick thought here, and I think you nailed it. But what's happening is we're seeing the dissemination of the good old boys club, looking out for one another versus looking out for the better of the sport and the athletes. And that's what we've seen. We've seen a few cases, and big cases, where possibly one coach was looking out for another, and hush, hush, don't say anything, wink, wink. And then after a few years, it plays out that it comes out into light, media gets a hold of it, and it really, really damages a sport, and it damages a sport's reputation. I think we're starting to slowly go away from that, because the good old boys club is starting to, the untouchables, I guess you can say, they're starting to be touchable at this point. And I think the next generation of coaches are going to go into the sport knowing this is not allowed. This is not okay. And don't try to cover anyone else, because ultimately you're the one that's going to pay the price.
Right. No,
so I think we're getting rid of that. We're getting rid of the good old boys club in there. It's like Vegas back in the 50s and 60s, how it was run. And I think we're starting to get away from that, and we're starting to go more into a we're starting to go into a more of a new generation of coaches where this will not be tolerated, and there should be zero tolerance.
And I think there's also a lot more perspective, even on the club level, from parents and other people involved. I was kind of amazed growing up. I was much more into baseball, for instance.
Right.
And baseball parents were very adamant about certain things. They were very involved with their kids and individual aspects of what was going on with the team.
Sure.
I noticed in swimming, though, there is just a massive amount of acceptance. And, oh, if the coach says, then that's what coach says, and that's what we're going to do. Which, to me, is interesting, because while I certainly don't want any program to feel like they're being undermined or a coach to be undermined, it's incredible to me that coaches can tell kids and parents what they can or can't do outside the pool, yet it's the parents are the one paying the money for their kids to swim. And so it's interesting to me that coaches can essentially run the lives of the athletes, and I think there's just a lot of acceptance on the behalf of the people who are on the team. And you end up with situations where things can happen at the club level that aren't taken seriously or aren't given the brevity that they're due, simply because people think, if that's the coach's team, this is what happens. But I think there's more, it's slowly changing to where people are becoming more active people are becoming more involved, and they're going to say, no, this isn't okay, and we're going to start taking care of it right here. We don't need to wait for USA Swimming or a governing body to make a difference. We're going to take care of it now.
That's correct. And I think, you know, that I take, you know, I this for me is a sensitive topic as well, because I do direct a club team myself. And as a director of a club team, you've got to look at it from many different angles. You've got coaches who are very competent coaches. Many of them have been to formal training. All of them have their, in this case, Southern California Swimming or USS certifications to say that they are coaches and they should be on the pool deck and they are competent of coaching your children. Just like 20, 30 years ago, you did not question a doctor's decision. 20, 30 years ago, teachers had more respect. 20, 30 years ago, parents were more respected. I think with evolving and the evolution of time, what's happened is some of that respect has gone by the wayside. Doctors are now questioned because of the internet. Parents are disrespected more than they used as they've ever been because of, I think, just because of you know, the way the things have evolved. And I think coaching is the same way, but you have to still draw the line and say, hey, you're paying me as a coach to do a job. Okay, it's not okay for me to be in a shower with your son or daughter after hours. No, that's not okay, and I get it. And I know that that could, you know, hurt people's feelings that I said that or anything like that, but I think it's true. You have to have common sense as a parent. If you see me as a coach and I'm doing the best that I can for your swimmer, I'm on the pool deck and I'm making sure and I'm looking out for your swimmer, that's what you're paying me to do. So there has to be a level of respect, because as the old saying goes, they swim, I coach, you cheer. And those are very basic, simple lines that should not be crossed. And what I'm seeing now more of, being a director, and I'm sure coaches who are listening will agree with me, coaches are being questioned now more than ever. Is it because of the sex scandals that are going on? Is it because there's internet? Is it because there's more access to information? Is it because, you know, you heard from somebody else's coach, you know, said something contrary to what you're saying? Coaches are being questioned. I think that level of respect needs to go back up. And you need to put a coach in that position of being a positive influence for your kids.
Right, and I agree. There certainly are going to be parents and swimmers who go too far. And at that point, it comes down to the club level, and there needs to perhaps be a conversation there. And if that swimmer or a parent doesn't fit in what that club is trying to acknowledge, then I think there needs to be a parting. I've certainly seen a lot of teams where there are families involved with the team that just don't fit with the club, but the club does nothing about it because, hey, they're paying their dues, and at that point, it's about money, and some clubs have to put up with it and some don't. But I think there are certain situations where doctors and teachers and coaches need to be questioned and parents need to be actively involved. But I think, like with anything, it can be taken too far. I mean, when you get parents to the point of where they're looking at and saying, oh, well, you told my swimmer to do this with their arm and have this kind of recovery. Well, Michael Phelps doesn't do that. You know, what do you know? Well, that's too far. But when it comes to a parent saying, hey, you know, I have concerns about a relationship that this coach is having with this swimmer, you know, those are the types of things that I think need to be handled on the club level, rather than people saying, oh, well, we don't want to ruffle any feathers. That's the coach. They can do what they want. No.
That's the common sense part of it.
Exactly.
Have some common sense. If I'm on the pool deck and I'm giving your child instructions, accept my instructions, accept my experience from the past. Okay, have some common sense. But if I'm asking to meet your child afterwards to strategize, have some common sense. You know, that's exactly. Not going to happen. Anything that I need to meet with your child about to strategize can be done on the pool deck with a pool full of swimmers. And, exactly. And you know, if not, you know, it can be done in the presence of other people. So let's have some common sense. And I think the most uncommon thing in this world is common sense.
Right.
And I run into it every single day. And it could come from me at times. But, you know, I run into it every single day. And it's just, this is one of those topics that I'm a little sensitive to because I think those lines have been blurred. And
absolutely.
And it we have to remember, there are 2,800 affiliated teams in USA Swimming, over 2,800 clubs affiliated to USA Swimming. A very small percentage of those club coaches are committing some of the atrocities that we've seen in the media lately. A very small percentage, but it goes without saying that small percentage can ruin it for everyone. So that's what we have to be careful with. We have to be careful and have common sense and make sure that these creeps, because that's what they are, is creeps. These creeps that are out there doing their thing and trying to have their way with young swimmers are kept in check and are ultimately thrown out of the sport and into some deserted island, you know, where they can get theirs.
Absolutely. No, I agree. I think, like anything, things can be taken too far, and some subjects are just simply so broad that they allow for, like you said, sensitivity on aspects where you would think common sense simply would take over, but unfortunately it doesn't. But coming back full circle, again, these are the types of things that need to first and foremost be watched for and taken care of at the club level. We don't need USA Swimming to come in and say adult swimmers can't date adult coaches because, you know, that way it's wrong. But, you know, Felipe, last note before we got to go, we're already running a little late, but you have to ask yourself, the issues that we're seeing a lot tend to be between adult male coaches and female swimmers. Now, even, you know, adult female swimmers, people still seem to think that, you know, there's something wrong with that, and that sets the premise. I wonder, though, if it was an adult male swimmer, an adult female coach, would it be as big of a deal? And I don't know that it would. I think, like anything else, for some reason, if you get you get an adult male that's the coach or the figurehead or the person in power, it becomes a much bigger deal than the opposite. And I tell you, it does exist that there are adult male swimmers dating the adult female coaches. It's out there, but we just don't hear about it. It's not as big of a deal. And whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. But again, I don't think we need USA Swimming or any national government body of a sport to come out and be the first line of defense with this. We need people on the club level to come out, be comfortable enough, confident enough to come out and say if they feel that something's wrong, and be open about it, because we don't need people sneaking around. We don't need rumors to start. We don't need the people talking behind each other's backs, because certain, you know, adults are going to have relationships with the adult that they want to be in a relationship with. And we just need people to be comfortable enough with saying, hey, there's an issue with this, or there's not an issue with this. If something is going on in one club, let that one club take care of it. Because like you said, the predominant number of clubs out there run fantastic. Mm-hmm. Swimmers enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Coaches enjoy it. Life goes on. Life is wonderful. Right. It's a small percentage that ruins it for everybody, and we can't let that happen. We have to use common sense.
You are 100% correct.
All right. So, Felipe, thank you so much, as always, for joining me. Lots of topics. Hopefully that'll stoke some discussion. Again, swimmingworldmagazine.com. Feel free to click on the show link and share your thoughts on anything we've talked about today or things that you would like us to talk about in the future. Right now, we are going to move on to my swim-off one-on-one interview conversation with three-time Olympian Ian Crocker. Ian, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Ian, it's been quite a while since I've had you on a swimming radio program, so it's great to have you back on. I know the listeners are going to be thrilled to catch up with you. And first, I know many of our listeners may not know what you've been up to since Beijing and 4 years ago in 2008. So if you could just give our listeners an overview of what's been keeping you busy and what's been going on over the last couple of years in the life of Ian Crocker.
All right. Well, you just asked for maybe a mouthful, but I'll see how I can break down the last 4 years. Ultimately, by the time I got to 2008 to Beijing, you know, what was on my mind was, you know, I know that I, you know, made a decent career with swimming, but ultimately there's more to life, and I just wanted to kind of break away from swimming and figure out, you know, what else I was good at. And so right after Beijing, I started a swim school with a couple of friends, a guy named James Fike and a guy named Neil Walker, whom everybody should know. So we ended up starting a swim school here in Austin. We were based out of Austin, and then Neil got an amazing job opportunity up in Dallas, and he's coaching in Rockwall in Dallas, and just had a dream facility and everything. So we were like, yeah, Neil, you got to go up there and do that. And we actually tried to do the swim school at both locations, up in Rockwall and in Austin. But ultimately, we were all kind of drifting apart in terms of like our goals for the business and our goals for ourselves. And so after a year, which was basically a crash course in business and what to do and what not to do and how to do things properly, we ended up folding it. But again, that experience was priceless. Also, out of that experience, I ended up reconnecting with a girl that I had met years before in college. And we started dating in the summer of 2009. And we ended up getting married this past October. And so that's a really exciting new chapter in my life. The lucky lady's name is Kristen. She's a Texas native, and she's just a great girl, a great person, and I couldn't be happier. So that I guess is the quick version of my last 4 years. And ultimately, I've been doing a lot of swim clinics to stay connected within the swimming community. I've been traveling this year exclusively with the Mutual of Omaha Breakout Swim Clinic Tour, and also doing some of the aqua events with you and Megan.
Absolutely. Now, before we talk about the clinics, let's talk about the married life. I know our listeners love to get a little more personable with the stars of our sport. Was your wife a swimmer? We've got to ask that question first.
She was not a swimmer. She was never an athlete of any type. And so it's kind of funny. I mean, she always, was fit and stayed in shape, but, never really did any sports growing up. Never felt like she was coordinated enough. And then a few years ago, she started doing CrossFit, and she's just finding out that she's like the Incredible Hulk. And she's actually, the last month or two, she's been just kicking my butt in workouts in the gym. As I'm slowly starting to get into respectable shape.
Awesome. Now, I've got to ask this question too. Are there any plans for any Ian Juniors in the near future?
Not necessarily the near future. Our kind of plan is, figure out how to be married for a couple of years and really, enjoy being married, and being young without the responsibility. And then we'll have kids in a few years, I think. At least that's the plan. And, you never know. Things change.
Absolutely. Well, the 2032 Olympics are just around the corner, so maybe we'll see Ian Jr. there. But on the note of kids, you talked about the clinics, and you do a lot of clinics. And again, as you mentioned, you've come out here and you've done some up here in Seattle area for my wife and I's company, Aqua, and the kids absolutely love them. But it's one of those things that you can tell when you're in the stands, when you're on the deck and you're watching this, that you really love these things too. And you get along so well with the kids. It's obvious that it isn't just a job for you. This is something that you passionately enjoy. Can you tell us on your perspective, what you get out of doing the clinics and connecting with these kids?
Well, initially when I first started, getting back into the clinic circuit a couple of years ago, I was kind of going through a rough spot, just in my personal life at the time, and I had also kind of drifted away from swimming as I was trying to focus on starting the business, and then having the business end up closing initially felt like a huge letdown in the long run. As I said, I it was a blessing, an absolute blessing, that it happened and happened the way it did, but. But it was challenging at the time, and then ultimately I ended up losing one of my best friends, and he ended up passing. And so the reason I tell you all that is because when I started doing the clinics, like I said, I was kind of in a rough place dealing with all these things, and what it did was connecting with the kids, it reminded me of you know, the innocence that I felt when I was 8 years old and first started swimming and was just eager to learn and liked to have a coach that that listened to me and wanted to hear about my goals and things like that. And so really it relit my love for swimming in general, but it also you know, relit my heart. And so I feel like a lot of times, you know, I get more from the kids than they get from me. You know, and I hope it's the other way around, but I certainly get that, you know, I'll never be in a bad mood on a deck full of kids, you know, working with them and teaching them and trying to encourage them and inspire them, because I think that there, as I've really realized in the last few years, there are far too many kids that don't have extracurricular activities and don't have real guidance after school, and so it's really important to keep them involved in sports and a sport like swimming. Of course, you know, it teaches you so many life lessons, goal setting, and long-term gratification, not immediate gratification, which, you know, is obviously a problem in our you know, on our planet.
Absolutely. Now, you talk about you're hoping that the kids get out of those events what you get out of them, and I can tell you from being there at several of your events, I can say absolutely, I know that's true. The feedback that we get, Ian, with you is just incredible, and I can say to all of our listeners, if you ever have the opportunity to go to an event that Ian's at, by all means, take it up. It's a fantastic experience for not just the kids and Ian, of course, but just for those of us in the stands who watch. So, of course, we'll take the opportunity, Ian, to thank you for everything that you do for all these kids, those who hope to be an Olympian in the future, and those who just do it because it's fun. The inspiration is phenomenal. And on the teaching side of things, it's not for you now, it's not just the kids. A bit of storyline that's come up is that now you're a volunteer coach for Texas. Swim World Magazine report on that. Could you tell us what made you want to do that and how that opportunity came about?
Yeah, well, ultimately, I've been on the University of Texas pool deck in some fashion for the last 12 years. In the last four, as I said before, I've kind of drifted away from it a little bit as I focus on other things. But ultimately, I appreciate in a fullness that can only come with a little bit more age beyond the college years, the experience that I had in college and through college swimming and how that really changed my life. And so I want to be able to give back to that same organization. And so I'm really excited. The women's team got a new coach or two new coaches. And it's just, it seems like there's a new spark on the pool deck. And it's just awesome to be, have been invited to be a part of that. Just having conversations with the new coaches, Rorik Fink and Carol Capitani. They're just great people with similar ideals for the sport of swimming and how to go fast. So, as I said, it's exciting. I'm very excited to be able to give my time to the women's team this year at UT.
Was coaching at the NCAA level something that you had planned for your post competition career, or was this something that just presented itself and you felt you had to, much pun intended, grab the bull by the horn, so to speak?
Yeah, well, I think I hadn't really, you know, when people in the past have asked me, do you want to coach? And my answer is that, you know, there are so many, there's a huge spectrum of types of situations for a coach to do their work in, and ultimately, my answer was always, if the right situation popped up, then I would love to. And this was definitely the right situation, because I'm going to get to learn from some great coaches with great experience, and work with a team that's really revitalizing and just about ready to I feel, turn itself into a bigger empire.
Right. Well, let's transition now from Texas to Team USA, the London Olympics. It's the first time in 12 years that you haven't seen the Olympic Games from the pool deck. I know when you were visiting, you and Megan had this same conversation about how it was a little different, but almost refreshing in a way, to see the Olympics from the television instead of on location. Can you give us a rundown of what the London Olympics were like for you?
Yeah. You know, initially, heading into this summer, I was a little bit pensive about, you know, going to Olympic trials, just because I felt like it would be really emotionally challenging being there and not competing for the first time in my life. And so had an opportunity to go to Olympic trials and watch. I mean, I was just so excited. You know, I didn't have any of the feelings of, you know, longing like I thought I might have. But, you know, I was just so excited to watch people go fast and watch people get ready to go and represent the U.S. In London. And so, as I said, I was really inspired. And then getting to watch them on TV, you know, the last time I was able to watch Olympics on TV, I was 14 years old. It was back in 96. And so my perspective is totally different from having gone to the last three Olympics previous to London. And so it really helped me put it into perspective what exactly the American audience sees on TV. And so, you know, I got to really follow the storylines, and I really got into the meat so much more than I'd ever been before. Because unfortunately, even though you're at the Olympics and in this amazing experience, you're really trying to focus on yourself to make sure that you can perform the best you can. So you kind of shelter yourself from the other stories that are going on, because you don't want emotionally, you don't want to waver. And so this way I was able to watch with emotional, reckless abandon and just really get sucked into the storylines of everybody.
Right. Now, how did you feel about Team USA's performance overall? You've been a part of the last three Olympics, so all the Team USA recent performance history, you can count yourself a part of all those great moments. 2012, you're watching as a spectator, being able to take it all in. From your unbiased opinion, how do you feel this year's team performed compared to all the Olympic teams in the past?
I think they did a fantastic job. I think coming out of Olympic trials, what was on my mind was, you know, it's such a young team, so many rookies, especially on the women's side, that, you know, I was hoping that they wouldn't get to the pinnacle of our sport at such a young age with such limited international experience and really have a hard time with it. But they all got there, and they all were stars, you know, and they handled the pressure and the situation so well. And it was just, you know, it was really, as I said, and I'll keep saying, it was just so cool to watch. And I could tell that the team really got – that there's chemistry there as a team, which definitely makes it such a great experience when it's a stressful time.
Now, Michael Phelps, of course, became the most decorated Olympian of all time, and he made the curtain call, retiring, he says, after these Olympics. I like to think, as a fan of the sport, that he wouldn't have ever reached the levels that he has had it not been for you. And I think a lot of people share that opinion with me, because you two had such amazing duels back and forth in that Hunter Butterfly. And I know that you both being so competitive, you drove each other to the heights of excellence that you two reached. So when he won those medals and he became the most decorated, did you look at that and say, you know, I had a part in that? I mean, between relays and just facing off with him to make each other better. Did you take any joy in knowing that you were, for many years, a part of his success in a way?
You know, when I was watching him become the most decorated ever, the thought wasn't, you know, I'm proud to have been a part of that, because I think, you know, if you would count any thing that I might have done as a part of his amazing feats in his history of swimming. I don't know. I don't deserve any credit for any minuscule part I would have had, but what I think is it was amazing to have been there firsthand and been literally fingertip to fingertip with him for years, swimming next to him for 8 years. And, you know, I'm proud that I was able to be that, that guy that was there, pushing him just as much as he pushed me, because I certainly know that I would never have become the world record holder in the 100 fly if he hadn't first broken my American record in the 100 fly. So he definitely pushed me to that next level. And so, you know, as a competitor at the time, I hated it, but in retrospect, I'm like, man, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I know, Ian, you're a very modest person, but I think I speak for everyone, and perhaps Michael, I'm sure, shares the same opinion that if he didn't have someone at your level who beat him and on any given day could give him the race of his life and back and forth, I mean, I absolutely am confident in saying that he wouldn't be where he was in becoming the most decorated had he not had someone at your level up there that he had to worry about every day. So modesty is great, my friend, but knowing that you could go, you could beat him on any given day, I have no doubt, helped spur him to keep going and to do what he had done. So as an American swimming fan, I think in our own way, we owe you a lot of thanks for just for being out there, like you said, for so many years. And in 2012, I know that a lot of people, myself included, would have loved to see you in that pool going at it with Michael for those another 4 years. So with Rio de Janeiro just 4 short years away, we've got to ask, have you thought about a comeback for those games or perhaps any championship meets in between?
Well, what I can tell you is, you know, I can reiterate what I said, which is that I was extremely inspired this summer, and I was inspired the summer before, which is why I initially came off the drug testing list, or went back on, sorry, the drug testing list last summer. Because I wanted that option on the table, but then I kind of realized if I was going to do that, if I was going to go for London this summer, then it's one of those things you can't do part time. You really have to put your focus in and really have very few things, if anything else, on your plate. And so I just felt that at the time, as I was trying to figure out and make my decision last summer, I felt like it was too short a time to be able to get done what I needed to get done. And that being said, a year later and 4 years out from an Olympics, you know, at this point, I have more desire to keep in better shape than I have been in the last 4 years. I think it was totally normal and acceptable for me to detune for a while, but it's time to shape up again. And so, you know, if that ends up fitting into my future and dovetailing well with you know, whatever ends up happening with coaching and you know, the other irons in the fire right now for me, then, you know, we'll see. I never say never to something like that, because I think as I'm getting older, again, I'm starting to really appreciate what a great sport we have, and also appreciate the gift that I was given to be able to swim the way I was able to swim for the number of years that I was. And I know that, you know, that fighter is still inside me. but it's a delicate balance of figuring out, does that fighter need to fight for something else, or is there still some fight left in that same arena? And that's a question that the next 4 years will answer.
All right. Well, Ian, without a doubt, we've talked about this course off the show several times. I, of course, would love to see you back in the pool. I have no doubt that you could get back there and be faster than ever. So for at least the sake of Team USA, I certainly hope that the spark continues to
to catch with you, and then the fire will start burning, and we'll see you back in the pool. But of course, we'll have you back on the show in the future, and perhaps we can reiterate this whether you decide to hop back in the competition pool or not. We can get your thoughts on where that stands, and also the status of Team USA and the stars that we've got coming up to the sport and going forward. And absolutely, we wish you nothing but the best in whatever it is that you decide to pursue. And I just can't thank you enough for coming on the show and giving our listeners an update on what's been keeping you busy over the last 4 years. So, Ian, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's an honor and a pleasure. Good talking to you as always.
All right, and that was our show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Join us again next week for another edition of Off the Wall on Swimming World Radio.